WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook. You're about to hear the Healthy Planet radio program as part of Natural Alternatives. But before that time, I want to urge you to take part in Radiothon. Radiothon is your turn, your time, your opportunity to help WUSB put forth this amazing, helpful, growth-promoting, health-saving programming 24/7 all year long. You can call to support us at 631-632-6901 or toll-free 888-632-9872 or online at wusb.fm. I'll repeat those numbers, 631-632-6901, 888-632-9872, and online at wusb.fm. If you're getting value out of these programs, and I know you are, then you need to call. Because that's how this volunteer-run, commercial-free radio station stays on the air.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. Well, it's officially Earth Month. And in honor of that, today's program will be a conversation between five longtime environmentalists. We'll be discussing a lot of the thoughts and feelings that led each of us to take on a life of living sustainably. That is, in a way that treats our life support system and all other life on Earth as if they matter. And since I've known and worked with these people for many years, I know that we all share a very deep motivation to make green choices. Nobody needs to convince us anymore. It's simply a part of who we are. In fact, I think it's so deep and automatic for us that sometimes we may forget that not everybody looks at the world and life in the same way that we do, and that not everybody is motivated to take on a sustainable lifestyle with the same voraciousness as us. I know that for myself, I sometimes have a tough time understanding how and why some people would be motivated to vote for politicians who knowingly work to weaken laws that are intended to protect life by protecting the air we breathe, the water we drink, and the food we eat. That's hard for me to understand because these issues have nothing to do with politics. In fact, not so long ago in the past, the environment was considered a bipartisan issue, with Richard Nixon being at the helm when the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Environmental Protection Agency came to be. So with all that in mind, this show is a chance for us to share with you some of our personal reasons for living in a way that favors life and health, certainly over short-term profit. In addition to those whys, we'll be sharing some of the how-tos as well. That is, what can you actually do today to live in a way that is more sustainable for us and future generations? And instead of doing lengthy introductions, since there are so many people on this show, I'll just say that each one of our guests today have co-hosted this show with me at one time or another. All are longtime friends and colleagues who have worked together to educate and inspire people to make choices that respect our bodies, the environment, and all life on Earth. Their names are Catherine Congdon, Bettina Barbier, Jennifer Grace, and Eric Eaton. And it's great to have all of you joining me at the same time on The Healthy Planet. So without further delay, let's begin our inquiry and our discussion. And we'll do that with a question. Can you remember a time before you considered yourself knowingly, consciously, environmentally aware? And what happened? What clicked the switch? What started that opening of that awareness?
I have something. When I was in fourth grade in 1960-something, somebody gave me Silent Spring and I started reading it and it was very upsetting. I immediately caught the link between not only pesticides, but plastic. At the time we were becoming inundated by plastic everything. So that was the beginning of my concern. And I have one other quick thing, which is that I think, you know, you mentioned why do people applaud destruction of the environment? It's because it's positioned to people as either having a job and doing business or keeping the environment. It's like that's the either or. That's all.
Right, right. And of course, that's a false choice because the jobs of tomorrow are going to be created by the environmental products that we're working on today. Yep. And that's basically because environmental products are more efficient, and efficiency is good business. So if you're talking about selling anything from a car to a boat to a plane to a house or a business, a buyer in making a decision between business A and business B, inefficient or efficient, is always going to choose efficient because they're going to have an increased bottom line or a lower cost of living. Now, if you have the environmental sensitivity to go along with that, that's great. And it's even more of a bonus. But what you're saying is absolutely correct, Bettina. That is presented as a reason to be against the environment.
On that subject of what first got me thinking about the environment, and as a kid, I used to love to play outside. So I guess I was near a wooded area. So that, and my grandmother lived near a lake. So I spent time in the woods and everything. So I guess I had an appreciation for nature that I might not have if I had lived somewhere else already. But some of the things that I realized there was something wrong was the first thing I think was, you know, we'd throw our garbage away. And as a kid, I always thought, well, someone does something with it. You know, they compact it or whatever. And when I found out they just were dumping it in the water off barges, you know, that was kind of a rude awakening to me that grown-ups weren't always thinking things through. Then when I was in middle school, my sister actually had this book, and I don't know the name of it, but it was about the part I remember that I'll never forget is about people who lived near a plastic manufacturing plant and the harmful effects that they had on them. And I think that that just woke me up to how bad things can be. And of course, as I got older, I learned about many other things, but those were the first things that I learned about that really impacted me. And as far as why do people embrace negative thoughts about conserving water and so forth, people are detached from the natural world. They don't see it as we're all one fabric, and they don't realize that, you know, in hurting things outside of ourselves in the natural environment, that we're really ultimately hurting ourselves. And there's also, in that set, there's the whole thing about being anti-politically correct. So they can make a joke about something that's going to conserve water in your house and feel like, oh, someone's putting this on me that I have to, I can use as much water as I want. It's just, there's no meaning to it because people have said there is no meaning and that it's a joke. And unfortunately, their trusted sources aren't to be trusted.
Yes, the point at which a young person realizes that grown-ups don't have it all figured out, that they don't always do the rational thing. And that is actually in itself an awakening, because I think my environmental awakening came once I realized that as well. Jen, you had something you wanted to add?
I didn't really have a moment so much as I, you know, grew up in an area near the South Shore of Long Island, Suffolk County. And as a young person, me and my siblings, we did a lot of exploring, you know, and exploring the woods, exploring the bays and the streams, and just developed a deep connection and appreciation. Most of my childhood was spent outside. And
that's the connection.
My father was an artist and also brought his easels outside and painted outside. So a lot of things were outside, and we saved baby birds and, you know, the whole gamut. But I can remember in college when the disposable plasticware entered the dining hall. For the first couple of years of college, we were all about China and regular utensils. And then the entire thing was revamped and every single thing was disposable. And I remember being very struck by that. That was pretty upsetting, and I petitioned people and tried to get things to change. But that, and I remember when bottled water came out, and I remember seeing these jugs of plastic water in the grocery store. And I don't exactly know what decade that was, but maybe in the 80s, I'm not sure. But yeah, those are the things that really hit me, but I've always had a deep connection to nature and that it matters what we do.
Eric?
It was, I'm going to say, I remember reading something about the air being really polluted in like smog over some city someplace. And I remember being really angry at how people could want to do that, you know, and at the time my thought was just of all these big smokestacks, every like mass producing stuff. And it was just, it really just made me so mad. And I was thinking, what, these people don't breathe air, you know, they don't. And then I remember reading about water pollution and they don't drink water and, you know, they don't, they don't let me pee in the pool, but they are globally doing the same thing, only worse. I remember that. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
And by the way, I saw a educational piece recently about how much pee is in a public pool.
Oh, I don't even know.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And they measure it, and you know it's a number of gallons over the course of a season. I forget exactly how many, but it was something like in a small public pool it might be 12 gallons, and in an Olympic sized pool would be maybe 130 gallons over the course of a season. Yeah.
You know, you just brought up another memory from when I was a kid. I think it was Tom Lehrer who had that song Pollution.
Yeah, I remember that.
A friend of mine had it, and we used to listen to that. If you visit an American city, you will find it very pretty. Well, yeah. Just things in which you must beware. Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air. Pollution. And then it goes on. It's a
humor. I remember that too, Catherine.
So, Jen, you were an early activist.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. And Girl Scouts, we would clean up the Carmen's River on Long Island. We would go out canoeing and bring back canoes full of garbage. And in an environmental club in high school, we would just pick roadsides and clean up. That was the type of environmentalism I was doing at the time.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember having an environmental awareness as a child. Now, of course, it's a whole different story, with the youth being some of the best energy behind the environmental movement. But back then, I guess the 70s was the start of the big political moves with Nixon. But I, as a very young person living at that time, wasn't aware of the whole 60s environmental movement arising. But I know in the 60s it was big.
It was big. It was there when we were kids.
Yeah.
In my high school, I started in high school in 1971. And they already recycled all the cans, all the cardboard, lots of cardboard and cans from the kitchen. But it was also a crazy high school that discouraged conspicuous consumption and things like that. So
right. It must have been a special high school because, I wasn't exposed to it. And I was a normal kid out there like any other kid.
Yeah.
Even though it was happening, I wasn't exposed to it. Nor did I know other people who were exposed to it. And which goes along with me not having known anybody ever as a child who didn't eat meat.
And I had that neighbor that exposed me to Rachel Carson's Silent Spring.
Right.
Which most kids don't have, but it was terrifying. You know, it was an early wake up call.
Yeah.
April 1970 was the first Earth Day.
There we go.
April 22nd.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 10.
Wow, I was 12. I'm older than you.
That's how the math sounds.
So I was unaware, and I remember not having any awareness, like it, not just not being aware, but not being aware that I wasn't aware until college. And then things kind of fell into place, but it wasn't until I stopped eating meat and I was exposed to that whole side of things that, and I didn't know that existed. You know, it was nowhere within my scope of vision.
So the Long Island Sound and the smog and all of that, just
didn't know.
On the South Shore anyway.
Yeah, we lived on the South Shore. I remember driving to the city and you'd see the big dome of dirtiness around the city when you drove in. And that was just normal. You know, the adults were accepting it. So I just thought it was normal.
How it is.
Right.
That's what there is around cities. Yeah. And then when I started reading Diet for a Small Planet about the impact of eating animals, not just on our bodies, but on the life support system of our world and on world hunger. And that was, I think, one of my big adults can be irrational and allow something like this can happen moments. it kind of blew my mind that I started thinking about it and realizing that people were starving, that there were a lot of people starving, just not having enough food. Unfathomable, because everybody I knew had food.
Yeah.
So that brings us to present day. Here we are. And who are we today that makes us just that little smidge different? Is it just the, I guess it's the young people that we just described growing up into older people who are holding on to those values, who had a realization because our eyes were opened at some point, for some reason, at some point, all different reasons.
And that yet today there are young people who have no idea. And there are many young people who are totally awake to it all. So where's that difference?
I've always felt like education was really key. That's why I've volunteered with groups I have, where they've been trying to educate people. Because I think for most people, once you find out the facts, it's a little hard to turn your back on them. Maybe you can, maybe you can justify them, whatever. But once you know about them, you can't unknow things. I kind of went back and forth from being a vegetarian from when I was about 19 or so. And then at a certain point, I was vegetarian for a while. And it was because of, well, EarthSave, I guess, actually, that I found out how much water went into making one hamburger and, you know, how many resources. And it was shocking to me. And true, what you're saying about how many people are starving and they could be eating the grains and the beans or whatever. We could be smart with how we have agriculture, but there are certain times in your life where something just makes that impact. So I feel like education is really key.
Absolutely, which is why a number of us on this call, all of us, have devoted a lot of time and energy toward doing education.
Yeah.
For decades. And for all of this, we can separate it into actions that we take for the environment, actions we take for the animals, actions we take for our own bodies out of self-interest, actions we take to save money. So you can check any of those boxes, but what happens is you check one and you start opening up to the others.
Yes. People become vegetarian for their own health and then they start caring about the animals because now they don't have the cognitive dissonance of consistently harming them. And they no longer have to be defensive about it.
Which is why slave owners were having a tough time looking at the slavery issue with a clear mind.
Yes.
Because there was so much profit for them at stake, so much money at stake.
On the topic of money, you know, there's something else too in our society. I mean, capitalism is the system that we, at least in the US, have grown up with. And the whole idea that I can do what I want if I can afford it. So for example, not just being able to afford to eat meat or afford huge cars, say for example, that just, you know, if I can afford to pay for the gas, I don't care if it gets 4 gallons to the mile. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even matter. And I think there's that kind of thing goes on and it's just considered normal.
Yes.
You know, because somebody can, doesn't mean they need to or that it makes sense or that should be something that's applauded.
Conspicuous consumption.
Yes.
The choice to be doing that.
Well, now there are people with big trucks with giant stacks belching black smoke on purpose with provocative signage and things just to, you know, make people angry. And that's in the past, 5 years-ish has become another thing. You know, right. Go ahead and stop me. It's my right.
Yep. And of course, the last 5 years have been a very different story in that I think in the long term, they're probably going to be a very important spark to the environmental movement, because at a very critical time when we needed to take urgent action on climate change, we stopped on a federal level. And when the need didn't stop, the science didn't change, the knowledge that we have about what needed to happen right then didn't change, but we lost those 4 years. So here we are, I think in a much expanded way and in a much expanded awareness coming out and addressing those issues with more
urgency.
Urgency, yeah, and zeal. But speaking about conspicuous consumption.
Yes.
How about conspicuous consumption versus the flip side of that coin, which is minimalism.
Mm-hmm. Conspicuous conservation.
Conspicuous conservation. Actually, I was watching some videos of people who are living as minimalists. It's very interesting. It even despite the fact that I have a lot of stuff, it really resonates with me because I also understand that stuff takes energy. Stuff takes time. Stuff takes attention. Stuff takes our lives because whatever it is, if we have 20 devices that require batteries, that means 20 times, aside from the batteries being thrown away, we're going to need to go and get that reminder and look for batteries and purchase batteries and change them in the device, or 20 things that require technical support every so often. That's 20 times over the course of our year. And you just add these things all together and it's a much more complicated life. So it's a matter of one of the videos I saw is assessing your true need and separating that from your material needs. What is actually needed? What is the true need? And the material need is what you need to fit in, to aspire to being something you're not, or what you want to be that you feel you aren't. And so the starting point for working on being a minimalist was to address the issues that you have within that are keeping you holding on to things.
There's a book, Material World, A Global Family Portrait, a photo book of people all over the world have pulled the possessions out of their homes and taken a picture, a family picture with all of their possessions. And it's quite dramatic, the differences in all the different places in the world and the amounts that people have in
I've seen those
countries.
And also pictures of people who put a full week's supply of groceries on a table in front of them, what their family would eat within a week. Mm. And looking at people from America, who are more wealthy than the rest of the world, a lot of the rest of the world, and then people in third world countries. Obviously, the difference is just stark.
Yeah.
And that, I think, with the crowd that I'm talking to now, is also a motivation, understanding that it's not just us. There's a whole world. And although we are able to wall ourselves off from what's going on, the tragedy that's happening all over the world, because if we couldn't, we would just cry all the time. We wall ourselves off, but at the same time, we have that awareness that if we could do anything to not contribute to that, we want to do that.
Right.
This is Bob DiBenedetto on The Healthy Planet on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook.
Hi, this is Rob, Dokas, Abby, Chris, Anastasia, and we are WUSB's Student Executive Board.
We hope our listening family and all our Stony Brook University classmates and families are managing well in this precarious time.
We are all home, but helping WUSB stay on the air remotely so we can keep you entertained and informed each day.
For only $5 per month or $60 per year, you can join WUSB's family of radio supporters, enjoy special members' benefits, and get a cool radio thank you gift.
Please help us stay on the air by calling 631-632-6901 or toll free at 1-888-632-9872 or online at wusb.fm/pledge.
WUSB, the most dangerous station in the nation.
Again, those numbers are 631-632-6901, toll-free at 1-888-632-WUSB, or online at www.wusb.fm/pledge. Thank you.
And let's take this opportunity to go into a little bit of music. Three of the participants in our call today, Jennifer, Eric, and Catherine, are musicians. And Jennifer and Eric, you're going to play something for us now. Why don't you tell us a bit about what it is?
This is a song called Today, and it's about really about people taking back their power and doing something about that. Everyone has ideas about what to do about the planetary crisis. I wrote it last year. What year are we in?
Yeah, about a year ago. It hasn't seen much daylight because of the current situation.
Get to live on planet Earth.
What
can we do?
What can we do today to appreciate her worth?
What can we do?
What can we do today for her health and her protection?
What can we do?
And to stop human practices sending her in the wrong direction. I have ideas, I do have a few, and I know that you do too. Get together and figure it out. Let's stop this crisis without a doubt. It's now or never, our time is quite small, but it's much better than no time at all. Today, another day, it's time to make a new direction.
What can we do?
While we still can implement our global course correction.
What can we do?
Our action, our inaction, our movement, or our stasis.
What can we do?
Will impact our future, our planetary oasis. I have ideas, I have a few, and I know that you do too. Let's get together and figure it out. Let's stop this crisis without a doubt. It's now or never. Our time is quite small, but it's much better than no time at all. Today, another day.
What can we do?
What can we do today?
What can we do?
What can we do? Do, 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 do. I have ideas, I have a few. That you do too. Let's get together and figure it out. Let's stop this crisis without a doubt. It's now or never. Our time is quite small, but it's much better than no time at all.
Ah, great.
That was fantastic.
Jennifer Grace, Eric Eaton. It's what they do.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
You know, I was thinking of something, Bob, too, that thinking back on when I started becoming aware of environmental issues, the thing I noticed was a huge pushback. And it's interesting. So it's kind of like there's a problem that needs a solution, right? There's an issue that needs fixing. And then there's some sort of proposal. And then that proposal might not be perfect. And then the people who are like vested in keeping things the way they are will point out the imperfections in the solution. Like an example I think of is the gasoline automobile was supposed to solve the pollution problem. If you were in New York City or London or any big city in 1900, you know, there were something like 100,000 horses in New York City getting moving people around. You could walk, you could take a bike, but you know, and there was a huge pollution problem, the waste problem, right? And the car, the automobile actually solved that. But as we know, it wasn't not a perfect solution, you know?
Unintended consequences, yeah.
Had consequences. So now I'm kind of thinking of electric vehicles now, right? And people hesitant to adopt them because they'll point out, well, the long tailpipe or something. And most
well,
of those...
the batteries have issues in manufacturing,
yes,
and disposal.
Sure.
Everything has its problems, you know, until we evolve to the point where we're just giant brains and don't need anything. But we can always...
We just learn to walk again.
We can get better, yeah.
Yeah, we could just walk again. But with all their benefits, battery cars, just like the gasoline cars were 100 some odd years ago, are a stopgap measure to address a problem that we're having now that needs to be addressed. And there will be future vehicles that are even better with less downside. But that doesn't mean we can skip over the step of battery vehicles at this moment.
So I've been driving an electric vehicle for about 8 years now. And the benefits have been so fantastic. So not just the environmental benefits, because even over the lifetime of an electric car, even taking all the imperfections about it, it's still way less wasteful and way less polluting than even the most efficient gas car. But for me personally, my experience with it has been so much better. I don't have oil changes. I don't have to fix muffler because I don't have one. I don't have a transmission. I don't have the only thing I really have to do is put windshield wiper fluid in, you know, change my wiper blades and put an air cabin filter in. Oh, and I rotate the tires. That's it. And every, you know, so often I have to buy tires. That's the maintenance, you know. So it's been a very positive experience as consumer, but it's also been a plus for the environment. And I'll just leave it there.
And that's the great thing about making choices like that, is that they can be both self-serving, not just self-gratifying, but can also pay you back while you're feeling better about how you're fitting into the world. So it feels a whole lot better to be doing these things. And it does not represent, in many cases, any decline in quality of life.
Right.
And so why not?
Because
we're used to doing what we've always done.
And enhancement of quality of life, really.
Exactly.
In so many ways, not just losing the cognitive dissonance of, I know I'm doing something that's hurting everything, but breathing cleaner air.
Yep. It is definitely something that can be win-win, like solar panels.
Yeah.
Saving enormous amounts of money over time, but also just knowing that you're not hooked into that big polluting utility that's just cranking out those emissions, burning that natural gas, putting out that methane, and changing our atmosphere for decades to come. You know you're not a part of that, and you're saving money, and you're enjoying the whole process because you're more hooked into being a part of everything instead of acting as if you're your own little island and what comes out of your tailpipe doesn't matter.
Yeah. As a solar customer, your light switch still makes the room light. Your toaster still makes toast. You know, all these things, they function just as they normally would.
And nobody turns off the sun if you don't pay the bill.
Right. I like that thing. A nuclear disaster would be devastating, you know, an oil spill, devastating, so on and so on. A solar disaster, we call that a sunny day. It's, you know.
Yeah. We've seen Fukushima. We've seen, you know, the Deepwater Horizon disaster, Prince William Sound, so many things that are so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And yet we still do it. And that's where the cognitive dissonance comes in. I don't think anybody would say that those are good things.
Right. Except, again, I think as Catherine pointed out, perhaps it was Eric, that a lot of people still believe in them because they think that it's going to put people to work. And it is somehow more American than industries that will put a whole lot more Americans to work.
Right.
Well, I mean, ultimately, we're talking about all of our personal choices, which is great, right? But it's a drop in the bucket compared to corporate accountability.
Okay. Right.
Happen
right.
In a big way, and profits can't be made off of the destruction of the planet.
Right.
Period.
What we do, what we choose is what creates corporate profits.
Right.
So, you know, the power, despite the fact that we're just these little tiny beings among billions of tiny beings on the planet, the highest power in the world rests upon the shoulders of all the billions of people that live in the world.
That's true.
And so that's our power. And to the degree that we organize and we act in a way that can create changes together, assuming that we all will act, and we do eventually, you know, if you speak powerful enough words, and you teach about this in a powerful enough way, eventually the world comes along with you. We know the solutions. Now, of course, via Healthy Planet and the previous organization, we've been teaching about this for decades. So, of course, we know the solutions. And as the song that you played earlier, a different song, Jennifer and Eric, it was about, you got to know right now. We're trying to let people know right now. We've got to get through to them somehow. And what we've seen is back when we started doing this in 1990, it was kind of like screaming without people and anybody listening. Now, however, that voice that we spoke with, that message that we spoke collectively resonated with billions of people. to the point that now both the environmental movement and the movement away from eating animal products are huge.
Yeah.
Huge. And back then it was non-existent, especially the moving away from animal products.
Right.
Now you can't get on a subway without seeing an ad for something vegan or watching TV, vegan cosmetics, vegan at Burger King, vegan at Chipotle, vegan everywhere. But when we started yelling this, screaming this, no one even knew the word.
That's really changed.
In 1972, when I was 14 and I became a vegetarian, I got yelled at by everybody. People that I considered my friends used to hide meat in my food because they thought getting me to eat meat would be good for me and, you know, everything.
And what age was that?
14.
14. I would have been one of those kids.
Yeah, Bob.
It was really funny. You would have,
No, I don't know if I would have, because I have no way of knowing what my mind would have thought about someone not eating meat at that time.
I don't think you were ever mean.
There was
a mean component to
I beat people up for good reasons.
Yeah, but if you had done it, Bob, you would have been trying
that's a joke. I didn't beat people up for any reason. Sorry, Eric.
Okay.
Eric, what were you saying?
I was saying if you had sneaked meat into Bettina's sandwiches,
right,
it would have been because you were trying to save her life.
Trying to help me, yes.
She would
have died.
That's right. It would have been with the best intentions.
Best intentions. And then you would have beat her up. No, wait a minute.
So we've been looking at some of what's behind our motivation to go green, to act in a more sustainable manner, something that considers not just ourselves, but the people around us, environment around us, and future generations. So now let's take a little switch here and talk about some specific actions that we take in our own lives that maybe other people don't know too much about, something that we think really makes a difference. Let's share some of those with our audience. I throw it out there.
I'll say a few things that I do in my own home, using LED bulbs, getting that home energy audit done. Actually, I had done that pre-COVID, and I'm finally getting my house upgraded as far as insulation goes and a new hot water heater.
Oh, fantastic. We will let people know, it's Green Homes on Long Island. Long Island Green Homes, it's through the Sustainability Institute. And we will post a link to that on the archive for this show.
And another thing I'm doing is PSE&G has community energy. So you can pay a couple more, whatever it is, per kilowatt hour, and you can get all your energy from solar or wind, you know, some kind of alternative energy. So that's one thing. I did get myself an electric car, and thanks to Eric for all of his information about it, I decided I needed to take that step. So that feels really good. But, you know, eating organically, using non-toxic cleaners in the house, recycling.
Which is easy to do. The non-toxic cleaners are easy. It's as easy as using vinegar instead of some chemical product. Using baking soda on sinks instead of using whatever product you used before that with all kinds of toxic chemicals. Very easy to do. Saves money.
One thing that I've been doing for a while also is if you have to do painting inside the house, is using no or low VOC paints. So you don't have all those fumes in the house. As soon as it dries, there's no paint fumes, no VOCs, volatile organic compounds.
I'll talk a little and then Eric can talk. We live in the same house and share the same car. So definitely being vegan and eating plant-based is a big, big thing. And composting, I buy a lot of secondhand things, which is, you know, the old basic R's, reduce, reuse, recycle.
And before you go on, composting, is that a difficult thing to do?
No, not difficult.
What do you do?
I mean, you saw that huge leaf pile in my backyard. You're like, wow, this is big. That's from 18 years of collecting leaves in the backyard.
You don't put your food waste in there as well.
What? We don't put food waste in it anymore because it kind of attracted certain animals, but I love those animals too. But we have an enclosed composter that you can turn.
Got it. Right. And it turns into?
Yes. Wonderful, rich soil.
Soil, yeah.
Garden. And we have a garden and we love to shop at the local farmers markets and when we can, and use, as well, as you were saying, non-toxic homemade cleansers plus what we use, Shackley and H2O at home too.
Yeah, growing your own food is big, not only because it saves the growing process, but it saves the transportation. You know, you get a little seed and then you have the food growing at your home and there it is.
Yeah, and of course,
that one of the biggest things that any of us can do, and anybody who's listened to the show knows about this, as you mentioned, is cutting meat out of your diet. That is a huge carbon footprint, a huge destroyer of the environment in every way, from water to air to topsoil, you name it. And it's something that each of us can do today at our very next meal. You don't have to wait to buy an electric car. You don't need to wait to put solar panels on your house. There it is, your next meal.
Yeah. I mean, and in terms of like the solar panels on the house, something else we've done is we're part of a community solar project. In our particular situation, we have too many trees to have solar ourselves. So we have solar panels that are part of a large array someplace else. And that production offsets our usage. So our usage is 100% solar, even though the panels are elsewhere. You know, the other thing we've done is we've added a heat pump to use as our cooling, you know, space cooling, space heating, and it uses no fuel. It doesn't burn anything to use it. And particularly since we have solar, we're using sunlight to both heat and cool our home. You know, there are a bunch of other things.
And you and I are members of the Air Source Heat Pump Hot Water Heater Club.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, and of course, having the electric car, we're driving on sunlight too, which completely obliterates that argument of, oh, a long tailpipe, like, you know, okay, you're driving here, but your emissions are at the power plant. Well, no, they're not. Our emissions are up in the sun. I don't know, you know, there are none.
Right. Solar is key to powering a lot of technologies that are green. Yeah. So I have solar panels. We have that on our house. It covers our geothermal heating and cooling, which instead of burning fossil fuels, transfers heat and cold from the ground. And all of that requires electricity to run. And of course, that electricity comes from the sun, from the solar panels, as does our hot water heater. And then very, very soon, our electric car, which will run on solar. Those things are very big. For us, it was a progression. And keep in mind, our progression is going to be different than your progression. Whatever you take on is the right thing for you to take on right now, one step at a time. I always like to point out when I do talk about this, don't worry about this being an unattainable goal. Well, do what you can in whatever small way. And then as you start doing that, the next action that comes from that gets easier.
I have a couple thoughts about things you can do that are small and easy.
You had wanted to say something about CSAs?
Jen mentioned this before, because not only do you get premium produce, but you keep open space locally. You keep a farm locally that only needs to be trucked a minimal way from the farm, not all the way from California.
And we've got the Green Thumb CSA here in Huntington.
Green Thumb CSA.
And we'll put a link to that.
And out east, they have one drop off. They have one in Huntington, New York, one in Park Slope, one is somewhere in Queens.
And what people should understand about that is that it's organically grown local vegetables that you pick up somewhere near where you live.
With no use of petroleum to grow them other than their little tractor. Conventional produce, people don't understand that those pesticides, they're all from oil, which is then turned into unbelievably toxic things that, you know, you don't even want to think about.
We'll really get someplace when we get veganic CSAs. Yeah, I have a house and I've been working on feeding plants and whatnot here and doing some reading into what's available for veganic gardening, for veganic, for the lawns that you have left, bushes, shrubs, fruit trees. And it's a challenge. It's not as well established as a lot of the other green things. It's getting there, but it's you have to do some digging and searching. And of course, veganic is like organic in that it doesn't use chemicals, but it also doesn't use any animal products.
Fish meal, bone meal,
right. Dried blood that comes from the animals, feathers. They're used in almost all fertilizing products. So you really have to search.
And speaking of landscaping and gardening, I use an electric lawnmower and not a gas-powered mower. It's got a battery that recharges and also an electric edger. And I use a rake. And a hoe.
We have the push mower that is geared to.
I do have those too.
Yeah, they're great.
But when I did have a landscaping company at one point, and what I asked them to do is not use the gas powered leaf blowers. I could actually smell the exhaust inside my house. So it's a good thing I'm getting this new insulation in. And we know the problems with those leaf blowers, that they blow all this particulate matter into the air that includes pesticides and all kinds of things that we put on the ground.
Animal waste hanging in the air. Lovely.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, when there are maintenance companies in your neighborhood, close your windows.
Yes.
Good point.
Another thing, just as going vegan or plant-based can help, you can look at nutritionfacts.org and look at what Michael Greger pulls out of the medical literature. You know, he's looking at peer-reviewed scientific literature, nutritional literature on how to do this safely, because everybody thinks you're going to shrivel up and die. It's easy to say become a vegan or become a vegetarian, but if you're not supporting people in how to do that in a healthy way, then that's only half of the puzzle.
Right. And additionally, the Environmental Working Group puts out resources to make it a little easier for people who have no clue about organics or healthy eating. They put a list out, a couple of lists, called the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen. And basically look online. The Dirty Dozen is the 12 fruits and vegetables that, if you have the chance to eat organically, do so, because they are the ones that contain the highest residues of pesticides. The Clean 15 is a list that is the 15 cleanest vegetables and fruits.
And you can go on their website, which is much better than the app. And you can also look at fooduk.com, which similarly ranks, I think, much better than the Environmental Working Group at this point, really ranks every product. You can also put in the barcode and, you know, it talks about all kinds of ways in which a product is good for you, good for the environment, or not, toxic.
That's good to know. I never heard of that one.
Fooduk.com, yes.
All right, we'll put a link for that as well.
You know, another thing, I was talking about recycling before. I try and avoid plastic when I can and buy things in glass. But there are places now, you know, when we think of recycling, you can drop your electronics off places. And also pharmaceuticals. So you're not flushing things down the toilet or throwing it in the garbage even, because it'll seep into our water table. That's something we really have to think about.
Absolutely.
On Long Island particularly.
And toward that end, there's a STOP program. Stop throwing out pollutants. STOP. And basically they take household hazardous waste. And in Huntington, they'll take everything from brake fluid to oil from your car and ammonia and antifreeze, disinfectants, herbicides, insecticides, a whole long list of things, pool chemicals that they'll take. In Huntington, they take it at the recycling center. Additionally, there are resources to dispose of unused medicines and prescription pharmaceuticals. That's called, in Suffolk County, Operation Medicine Cabinet. And you can get more information about that by calling the Suffolk County Police Community Outreach Bureau at 631-852-6109. That's 631-852-6109. Don't worry, it's all anonymous, and because you should never flush your medications down the toilet bowl, because those medications can go down and become part of our water supply.
Yeah, I've definitely used those, the stop drop-offs, to get rid of, you know, old paint. What am I going to do with that? I don't want to throw it out. That is great.
Okay, I'll add one. When you use water to wash your hands, use cold water. This applies to some of you listening, but not to everybody. If you have a long house and your hot water heater is at one end of the house and your sink is at the other end of the house or upstairs, and you turn on the water, the hot water, and you wash your hands in the hot water isn't hot. It doesn't get hot. It could be up to a minute, because it takes time for that hot water to go from the hot water heater through the pipes and get up to your sink. Now, the fact that the water isn't coming out of your faucet hot does not mean that you're not wasting hot water, because you are filling your pipes with that hot water and causing your hot water heater to have to replenish the water that was used solely to fill your pipes and not to wash your hands. So whether you turn on the hot faucet or the cold faucet, depending on the length of your house, of course, and whether or not you've used the water recently, often it just makes more sense to use cold water that does not cause that demand to happen at the hot water heater in the first place. And that's despite the fact that my hot water is heated by solar.
I like it. I do. That's what I do.
Right. And again, it's not asking anybody to freeze themselves and to do something that is ruining their quality of life. It's saying, if you're not getting hot water anyway, use the cold. The hot water heater uses about 20% of the energy that we use in our homes.
Really?
And so you can save quite a bit of energy and money by doing something that isn't going to change the temperature of the water that you're using in the first place.
On to another subject is clothing. Jen had mentioned buying used things. I buy a lot of clothing at consignment shops, or I try to buy organic clothing. Sometimes that can be a little expensive. So maybe it balances out going to the consignment shop and buying organic clothing or towels or sheets and things like that. And even places like Bed Bath & Beyond or Pottery Barn, you know, there are a lot of places, you know, Target, they sell organic as a side sort of thing.
Right.
For dry cleaning, I use a green dry cleaner.
And you can hand wash a lot of things that say you must dry clean them.
Right, right. I'm not saying I go to the dry cleaner all the time, but I can tell.
No, there's some things you absolutely can't, but a lot of people don't realize you don't need to follow those labels slavishly.
Right. But I know the difference in the smell.
Yeah.
There's no odor when I get my clothes.
Sure. That's
like
great.
A regular dry cleaner would have.
And I'll take the opportunity to mention here that in Suffolk County, according to local law, it is now required that every professional garments cleaning establishment, dry cleaners, post a sign informing customers about the chemical solvents that are used at that cleaner. And that sign is rated from green to red, which represents the least preferable option, which is the red, to the green, which is the most preferable option. And we have Beth Fateni, who does this show once a month in Green Inside and Out, and Karen Miller of Prevention is the Cure to thank for getting this law passed in Suffolk County. And we'll post a link to that on our page at www.healthyplanetusa.org for this archive. And speaking of clothes, when you're doing your wash, you can do the wash in cold water. And that saves a lot of the energy that would be used in just washing clothing because, again, using a lot of water to heat means your hot water heater has to come on and either burn gas or electricity to do so. Again, no change in quality of life. My clothes look fine. I know maybe my friends don't tell me, but my clothes look fine in cold water.
Well, and a lot of them say wash in cold water outright. It's not like you're sacrificing anything.
Right. It's gentler on your clothing.
One thing, even if you're not buying organic or you are buying organic clothing, is to look at the processes. There have been a few movies out regarding process, like the process of making blue jeans.
Oof.
The dye in the blue jeans gets into the water that gets into the ocean. I mean, you know, there aren't pollution controls places. And so really try and look at whatever you get, whether it's clothing or anything else, try and look at the supply chain and do your research as much as you can.
A really good resource for that is The Story of Stuff. She does a bunch of videos about that kind of we don't live in a bubble realities.
And on that note, we've got to wrap it up. I'm going to leave the rest of the show to Catherine Congdon to play some original music. Catherine, tell us about it.
So this is a song I wrote quite a few years ago called Pesticide Project. So here on Long Island, we have a water table, and if anything you put on the ground takes about 20, 25 years to get down to the water table, but eventually someone's going to be drinking that. And of course, we all know the iconic little yellow signs on people's lawns showing that there's been a pesticide application. So that could be another name for this song. Put up a little yellow sign. Pesticide Project.
Pesticides all over the land. Things have gotten out of hand. Who is gonna stop this madness? Unless it's you or I. I see my neighbor walk by. Up on to it. Spraying all her plants and flowers while she smokes her cigarette. Put up a little yellow signs, toxins sink into the ground. Out of sight, out of mind, until they reach the water table. Life on earth used to smell pretty sweet. And the water, if you knew from which spring to drink. Now When will we wake up and realize nowhere else to live? When will we understand that what we discard comes around? Through the door, the air, the sea, it's all around us now. Put up a little yellow sign, these toxins sink into the ground. Out of sight, out of mind, until they reach the water table. I tried my card to the marketplace, spewing fumes all over the place. I wonder why the asthma rate is soaring high. Stuck in a traffic jam, wish I'd walk my bicycle. Breathing in exhaust and seeing sky through a brown haze. When I was a kid, were there really better days? We take for granted what we've got. Think technology will save us. Can we take a chance on that? Cause we're only human.
Thank Jennifer Grace, Eric Eaton, Catherine Congdon, and Bettina Barbier for joining me on The Healthy Planet. This is Bob DiBenedetto, and we're on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook, New York. We'll be with you again next Friday, April 9th, at the same time. That's right, at 6 p.m. For more information on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, or if you're interested in having me do a virtual presentation to your school or group, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. That's healthyplanetusa.org. Or email us to join our mailing list at info@healthyplanetusa.org. Also, like our Facebook page, which is @HealthyPlanetUSA. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives and The Healthy Planet shows every week at this time, with great hosts sharing cutting-edge health and environmental information. That's Fridays at 6 p.m. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four-legged friends, and enjoy this beautiful world that we all share.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience, but every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.